This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session of the radio show shares my conversation with Brian Brannon, my first person on the street interview, albeit we did this via virtual conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of the pandemic period. Brian and I get to know each other as we explore his work as a quality assurance tester on massive multiplayer games, MMOs, for terrible posture games. Yes, this was a fun adventure. You will likely learn a thing or two. I did, especially on how gamer is not a good term to use these days. Our conversation runs around 32 minutes, so let's listen into my conversation with Brian. All right, Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR.FM, and 102.9 on the Franklin area dial. One of the things I've long wanted to do is kind of like meet the person on the street and have a, you know, just an impromptu conversation. And I just bumped into, obviously virtually, because, you know, social pandemic, social distancing, et cetera. So Brian, glad to have met you in this way.
Hey, how's it going, Steve?
It's going pretty well. So we've met just virtually. We're going to do this recording and explore. So you're here in Franklin and you're a gamer. So tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do in the game world.
Sure. Yeah. So gamer is a funny term to use because I'd say developer in my situation. But, you know, terminology to me is important mostly because gamer has become a weirdly loaded term in my industry. I don't know. We had Gamergate, if you've heard of that, kind of tarnished the word there a bit, but that said, I've been making games for about 7 years now. I'm a quality assurance professional, so I'm the person that literally plays games all day.
The significant piece that you do is you find the bugs before the users do, hopefully.
That's what they pay me for. Yeah.
So you like to break things as well.
Oh no, that's my MO. Since I was a kid, broke every game I ever played. And my mom tells a story that, you know, I would tell her I broke a game when I was a child, and she's like, there's no way that's, you know, you spent good money on that game and lots of other people worked on it. You couldn't have broken it. But I've broken basically every game I've ever played. And now I'm getting paid to do it before other people can break it, ideally. So.
And, you know, there was somebody along the way, and the name escapes me at the moment. I'll come back to it. But do what you love in the service of those who love what you do, what you do. And hopefully they'll pay you for it. So it sounds like you've hit that spot.
Well, yeah. So that was a funny development. Is for solidly a decade, maybe even 15 years before I got into doing QA, I had been a beta tester for pretty much every major like MMO that came out. So like I beta tested EverQuest and World of Warcraft and
interruption for MMO. Some people may not understand. Yeah. That's a
massively multiplayer online game. They're typically role-playing games, and it's sort of been the driving force of the industry for, you know, 20, 30 years now, at least 20 years. And those were just games that I really like to play. And as a beta tester, ideally you reported a lot of bugs. So a bunch of people saw those as just a way to play the game early. But for me, I really wanted to like find the problems because I could, you know, and it to me, it was fun to like sort of break something, figure out what I did to break it, and then like give them a bug report. Right. And I did that enough to where developers were contacting me to invite me to their alpha tests, which is like even before beta.
Yes.
And still didn't realize I should be asking for money at some point in these transactions, but did it for a long, long time. And just in vagaries of at one point I thought I was going to be a lawyer. It's kind of what I went to college for originally. I got an associate's in film, actually. And then I was trying to figure out what I wanted to get my bachelor's in finally when I was in my early 30s and was like, why don't I get into game design? Because I've been passionate about that since I was a kid. And I knew at this point a bunch of people in the industry. So I sort of asked them, I was like, does this make sense?
Along the way, certainly, yes.
Yeah, and just friends, you know, and all that worked in the games industry. And they all were like, well, you don't need a college degree. But I was like, well, I want to finally get my bachelor's. And I put this off for a long time. And so I looked all around at the schools that had game design. And this would have been like 2010 or so. Okay. And Becker was like extremely, extremely highly rated. And so I applied to a bunch of different schools, but Becker was my top choice. And I got in and so moved. At the time I was in Montgomery, Alabama, moved up to Worcester and started attending Becker and just had an amazing time there. It took me just under 3 years to finish. got very involved with MathDigi, which is an organization that's all about connecting students and game developers.
Okay.
And giving you sort of a good path into the industry when you graduate. And made a ton of connections there that, and got just so much good mentoring and all that. Honestly, I don't think I'd have the career today I have if not for the help of MathDigi. But I also threw myself into that, you know, so it was like, I took the opportunity to say, hey, I can like talk to game developers and ask them all the questions I've had. I'm going to do that, you know, and just really dove in with both feet, and it turned out great for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Becker, I think I just saw them in the news. They're closing.
Yeah, it's real sad. I actually worked with another kid from MathDigi who's graduating right now, Robbie Williams. He's a real good friend of mine that went to a talk I gave at MathDigi after I came back up from Texas, because I moved to Texas to get my first studio job.
Right.
I came back when Disruptor Beam offered me a job, and went and gave a talk at MathDigi just to say, hey, here's how you get in the games industry. And one of my pieces of advice I gave was like, well, network with people and like keep in touch with them. And if they have job opportunities, hopefully they think about you. Because yes. I had actually gotten my job at Disruptor Beam that way, because the CEO contacted me out of the blue to say, hey, did you come back to Massachusetts? Are you interested in this job? And I, at the time, really was, had just started looking for work and was like, your timing's great. And so happy to move back, and gave this talk. He kept in touch. And then when I had contract work, I was like, hey, Robbie, you know, you want a job? So I was able to help him. But yeah, Becker's done after this semester. So, you know, they've had a pretty long history, and it's just the problem with COVID and small private schools, you know, that tons and tons are going out of business now. And, yeah, and I'm obviously bummed that Becker's going away. You know, the school I went to anyway.
So. Especially so soon. Yeah. And for disclosure, I went to Assumption College, which is in the neighborhood of Becker. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so yeah.
Another Worcester school. Yep.
Yes. Yep.
And, part of the consortium.
my daughter is still, she was an Assumption grad. She recruited for Assumption WPI, pharmacy, and she's recruiting for St. Michael's, but she, because she's in the admission side.
Yeah.
She's aware that clearly it's more of a demographic piece. The demographics are such, there's just not enough colleges to support the population that's coming to us.
Totally.
And the pandemic is just expediting some of those closures. Because
I think it's weird, because I don't think anybody, like I know Robbie's in the situation, I don't think anybody graduating this year wanted to go to Zoom University, right? Like that wasn't what anybody signed up for, especially a school like Becker that's all about teaching you professional skills, you know, and so much of what I got out of Becker and what I wanted out of Becker was that opportunity to both like be in person with a bunch of students with similar interests, but like take classes with industry professionals and get to meet a bunch of people from the industry, right? And all of that happened when I was at Becker's campus. And I know Robbie's like doing the best he can, doing a lot of MathDigi work, but it's different, you know, and it's not the same as being there in the classroom, you know, having people come by, getting to meet face to face with them. Like so much of those things were the benefits that I chose Becker for and got out of Becker. And I feel terrible that a bunch of students were deprived of that. Now they're moving the program over to Clark, and Clark's a fantastic university. So
yes.
I know it'll do well there. But I'm going to miss Becker. You can't see it, but I'm wearing a Becker shirt today, actually, that I got when I went to go see Robbie last week, actually, and we hung out for a bit. And I went to the school store, had everything like half off with the logo. So I picked up a nice polo with the Becker logo, just missing it already, you know, so.
Yes. Yeah. No, there's a Becker, certainly, and there's going to be some others. We'll figure out who they are over time. But I think into what you've said, and I've retired now, but when I had been working, the company, at least my particular group within the company, had decided we would go remote. Mm-hmm. So effective, I think it was June 2016. So for the last, you know, 3 years of my working, I was primarily remote. But the group itself determined that while we could work remotely and functionally, we were in a worldwide position. So I would have a Hong Kong phone call in the morning or in the evening, et cetera.
Sure. Yeah.
It just made sense to commute virtually. You know, it was a little bit easier. Didn't have to worry about missing the train to catch a phone call, et cetera.
Also, it's an interesting story there, because I had ended working with Disruptor Beam last March, which my whole team got laid off. Long story. This is the games industry, very, you know, ups and downs, kind of roller coaster from time to time. But I got really lucky. This was like the first week of March. Got to file unemployment a week before everybody else did.
Yes.
So I managed to get in the system there, and I got a job offer a couple of weeks later, thankfully. So I've been working for the last year with Terrible Posture Games, which is a small indie studio. We make a game called 3 out of 10, which has got two seasons now on PC and season one's on Xbox and Switch as well.
Okay.
But yeah, the process has been really interesting, because I had a few job offers, and I intentionally chose Terrible Posture because they were an all remote studio and had always been all remote. Okay. And the funny story there is, you know, I'm in Franklin, but my boss actually lives in Sharon. So he's not that far away.
He's almost a neighbor.
Yeah. And there's a couple of other Massachusetts people that I work with. He and some of the other people I'd worked with had been at 38 Studios as well. You know, okay. So you know probably some of that story. That was a big flame out there that was Massachusetts and then Rhode Island, but it scattered a lot of very, very talented people throughout the area. And so my boss, Joe Mirabello, he actually founded Terrible Posture not long after 38 fell apart.
Okay.
And they've made a few games now, but I've had a great year working remote. And I think I made a great choice because I figured a year or so ago, I was like, I think we're still going to be in the situation a year from now. Like, I just have a feeling, you know, we're still going to be wearing masks. We're going to be staying home. And I want to work at a studio that's been doing this for longer than a couple weeks, you know?
Right.
It's worked out great, but the weird thing now is that I'm starting to look for work again. And my boss knows this, so I'm not surprising anybody here. Just again, ups and downs in the industry. I was really certain I could find another remote job. Like, I was like, well, everybody's doing remote now. And like, I work on a computer. What does it matter where I work on a computer from? Because my whole job is all digital.
Sure.
You know, but I mean, granted, I had like five, six years of working at studios before that. And I get that some things are like definitely easier when you're in an office of a 50, 60, 100 people or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can just walk over to somebody's desk and talk to them about a problem, right? Or just gather the three or four people that need to be in a meeting and go jump in a meeting room, right? Like that kind of stuff is convenient, but and communication definitely is harder when you're working remote, but it's not impossible.
No.
And I think we're like at this cusp where now that things are starting to reopen, and people are having to figure out, like, are we going to go back to being all in office again? Are we going to try to do some hybrid of remote in office, or are we going to go all remote? I think there's like a lot of interesting choices to be made. Yeah. And I know from what I'm seeing in the game world is like the smaller studios, especially, I think are fine being remote. It's when you start to get a little bigger that they've got fancy offices, you know, they want to stay in their fancy offices. And I think there's some reticency there to like just go fully remote when you've already got a office structure and some people have only ever worked in offices before the last year, you know.
I think that's going to be a management learning point, because clearly there were some managers even back in the corporation where I was who were aghast that our group went fully remote.
It was
practical for us, but some, no, I want to see your face all the time, as if that was the only way we'd do work. No, I mean, clearly there are people on one end and there are people on the other, and I think we're going to be more certainly along that continuum. Will be the sweet spot for wherever the company, and some companies in their business, clearly you're going to have to be there, you know, in the manufacturing, you have to be there at the device to do that.
If the robots are already using the machines to make stuff, they don't need you in the first place.
right. Yep. But in other cases, even, you know, we can be virtual as long as you've got good power, good internet and the technology to deliver and make the communications, you can be almost anywhere. Absolutely.
And from talking to recruiters, it seems like the where a lot of this kind of change happens is at these big, what we call AAA studios in the games industry. So AAA being like the highest mark of excellence, like typically hundreds, if not thousands of employees at these companies, you know, which for a game studio is a lot. I started working at one of those called Tryon Worlds that was a several hundred person studio split between Austin and Redwood City, California, near San Francisco. They made MMOs. I had beta tested their first game, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it was like one of those where I had a history of the company and had a great interview and just really, really loved my job there. They very much had that sort of culture of, you know, we're doing everything in office. Some people worked remote, but it was like very much seen as like an odd thing if you ever did some work from home days, you know. And what I experienced like both there and at Disruptor Beam was like working from home when most people are at the studio, you miss out on so much because people don't always think to like start a call. People will have little conversations and work out a problem when you're not there. And especially as a quality assurance person, you know, QA tester's job is like, I need to know everything that's happening in the game because I need to be the person testing it to make sure it's good. But like, if there's a random discussion that happens about something that's changed and I'm not involved and nobody tells me, I come into work next time and they're talking about a new system in the game. And I'm like, when did that happen? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, when you were working from home the other day, you know, and so I just kind of got to the point where I just, even though I could work from home a day or two a week, I just didn't do it because I would miss out on too much, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's I think the AAA studios are going to hit a point where they start to hire all remote people, because that's recruiters have told me they're eyeballing that now as a possibility. And it creates really interesting scenarios, because like a lot of what those studios do to get really good talent is they pay to relocate people, right? And that's like some of the jobs I'm looking at as a like a job in Vegas, a job in LA, a job in San Francisco, a job in Seattle, even some jobs in Canada. And one of the big things is like, well, everybody's working remote now, but come into the summer, early fall, we're going to want you to relocate, right? And part of the offer is they're going to pay to relocate you.
Yep.
But you could just work remote, right? I mean, and I think this they're sort of seeing the cost benefit of that now, right? And I even mentioned to a recruiter, hey, I would work for less remote. I'm going to ask for more money to relocate and go take a job in person, especially in California, than I would take if I stay in, you know, near Boston and work from home.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're got at some point in time, I think the cost of the work will, especially remote, will hit to some of those managers who are so dead set that you have to be in your face, et cetera. And I totally agree, as we've talked before, that being in person, there are some things that generally happen easier, but you can still make them happen virtually. So yeah, other than having to physically be there because that's the tape you need to change or the part you need to put on, for much of the other, you know, proprietary work, professional work, you can be almost anywhere. And cost, with, especially in a gaming space.
Well, yeah, for PC games, it's all literally just on my computer. Like I download the files that have been changed to my computer. I create a build of the game on my computer and then I play it on my computer.
Right.
You know, like it never leaves my computer. For console games, it's a different story because I need development kits, right? But this day and age, for the most part, it's not too hard to get a development kit. So I have a few different development kits that are the property of the company I work for.
True.
And if I do take another job, I return my developer kits to the company. Because
that's proprietary info, et cetera. Yep.
But that's like the actual only hardware component I need. Because basically in that case, I've got a console that acts as close to a retail console as possible while allowing me to put my own code on it.
Which is part of your test bed. Because once the game goes out, it can be on anybody's system, right?
And I have to really, on consoles, like I need to play it on the console. Because like when we're making the builds, they build slightly differently when you're building them for console than they would for PC.
Sure.
And we'll find bugs that only exist in the console builds.
Yeah.
And like even more specifically, like sometimes one of the weirder things in QA is we'll test developer builds for a long time where there's like cheat codes enabled and stuff.
Yes.
When we get closer to launch, we'll go to a shipping build where you can't cheat in the game at all.
No.
And there, it shouldn't be different than the development build. And yet, sometimes bugs that only pop up in those shipping builds. And since we don't have cheat codes, it can be harder to reproduce them too, you know?
Yes.
And especially on consoles, like we run into a lot of weird console-specific issues that only happen like on the developer kit and sometimes like only on a retail kit, which... you hope that you don't run into those because like ideally the developer kits are as close to a retail kit as possible that there shouldn't be a problem. But every now and then somebody will get a bug on the retail build of the game that I can't reproduce in my developer kit, but I'll load up the game on my personal Xbox and I can reproduce the bug. And it's like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's frustrating, you know?
Yeah.
So you never catch everything, but it's, you know, risk mitigation is like a lot of the name of the game. And you're, especially in like the MMO scale of games where there's hundreds of thousands of players like playing concurrently potentially, some of those problems you can't reproduce unless you're a person in one country playing with a person in another country,
right?
The server you're both playing on is in yet another country.
The sequence of the transactions need to be just so, right?
And so I can't reproduce those when I'm in an office and the server I'm playing with is in the same office as me, you know?
Right.
And the other players I'm playing with are also in my office.
Yeah.
There's just some issues that are just network code related that they bedevil our engineers, you know, because we can't actually reproduce them, but the players can. And I can go get on the live game and sometimes reproduce it, you know?
The intermittent problems are always the devious ones. Yes.
Yeah. The 100% repro. Here's my exact steps I took to do this. Every single time I do this, this happens. That's easy because then the developer can hopefully also reproduce it. And if not, you know, I can walk through, here's what I was doing. Like, look at my video. Here's my steps. Hey, are you doing this on a shipping build of the game? Like, have you made an external build in the game and you're not just testing off your local depot? Because I'm sure it works in your depot, but I promise you it doesn't work on this build of the game.
Yeah. And then to your point, in terms of the risk, clearly if you do a particular sequence and it turns out, you know, something relatively innocuous, like, well, maybe the color tone is different here versus, you just crashed the entire system.
Sure. Those are like the priority scale, right? So like the two big things that are like priority one or even like priority zero, depending on how your company does the systems, would be anything that crashes the game. Cause like a crash just means sometimes the player will crash the game and then they never play it again, right? And we don't want that to happen, especially in a game where we're like free to play and we're expecting you to spend money to play. If you crash, maybe you never spend another cent on the game, you know?
Sure.
The other big thing being in those situations where we are charging some money to get an extra experience, anything that affects our ability to like take money from you,
yes,
like anything on the transactional side of that is like massively, massively important. Mm-hmm. So in 3 out of 10, we just have sort of a single player narrative game that's like a hybrid of a sitcom and a video game. It's sort of a whole animated sitcom series about a game development studio who's never made a game that scores higher than 3 out of 10, which is where the name comes from.
Right.
Which is terrible, by the way, because most reviews never get below 6. Like 6 is pretty bad. 8 is pretty normal. Like 9 or 10 is exceptional, yep, you know.
Yeah.
3 never happens. So the studio's never made more than a 3 out of 10. And it's a fun game because we actually had an animation team in-house that just worked on it like it was an animated series, you know. And then I was on the team that was like working on the game sides of it. And, you know, the two sort of never met in terms of development a lot of times, except that some of our like engineers would help make tools for the animators, you know, but for the most part, the sort of game design people worked on one half of the game, the animation people worked on the other half of the game.
Okay.
And then in the end, like I tested all of it, you know? So yeah, yeah. It was certainly a fun project to work on, but a very different scale from hundreds of thousands of players simultaneously hitting the same, you know,
sure,
code. Yeah. Well, very different problems.
Indeed. Good. And Easter eggs come up from time to time in games, right?
Yeah, sure. We had some hidden in 3 out of 10. I don't want to say too much because I don't know how many things players haven't found, you know.
Right.
But that's
no spoiler alerts. Nope.
hiding your signature somewhere is a big thing for level designers a lot, right? Like famously there's a YouTube channel that looks at really big AAA games and tries to find a lot of these Easter eggs. And this YouTuber will find like really interesting hidden things that oftentimes they'll do a lot of what's called like sequence breaking or things sometimes where you can kind of get outside of the boundary of the game. So the game expects you to be in this enclosed space, but maybe if you like jump off of objects a certain way, you can get up above another object you weren't supposed to be able to get over. And now you're kind of outside of the play area the game expects you to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can find some really weird stuff that way. But yeah, that kind of stuff, you know, usually as a QA tester, I'm trying to make sure you can't do that.
Right.
And I've certainly,
at least not easily.
I've written a lot of bugs. In fact, I know a situation specifically in 3 out of 10 where Robbie, who I mentioned earlier, found a way to get outside of a map, and the developers were trying to decide what to do. And I said, hey, I'm fine with players doing this as long as we give them a way to get back inside the map, you know,
safely.
Like,
yes,
once you got inside, you could easily fall off the edge of the world and you're just falling forever. And now, granted, in that game, it's real easy to reset the game. But I was like, well, as a player, I would have more fun if you give me like a ramp back. So if I shot myself out with a ramp, here's a ramp to get me back into the space. And now I'm back in there, you know?
Yeah. The safety like hook.
If you've nearly beaten the game and you're really close and you accidentally shoot yourself out of the map, yeah, you can restart, but you lose all the progress you made, you know? And so it's like, give me an option to get back in. And they did do that. So I was really happy because I had to like talk the dev into saying, come on, it's not that much work. And like, it'll really be better for the player who does this because they're going to feel like, oh, that was a really cool experience,
yes,
versus feeling really frustrated, you know?
Yes, definitely. That sounds good. That sounds like you have a lot of fun. Yes.
Yeah, it's playing games for a living is really interesting. It's different than what most people think, I think, because, you know, so much of what I'm doing is trying to play in ways that the designers and developers didn't expect, you know. It's like,
right,
what can I do that they didn't expect me to do? And weirdly, just the way I play is often unexpected, it seems like, because that's how I break a lot of games.
Okay.
I break games when I'm off the clock and I'm not trying to, I just want to have fun. And I break the game because I'm just doing something I didn't know was weird, but apparently it was, you know. So
yep. Indeed. So while you've been here in Franklin, and certainly I think you found Franklin along the way, Franklin Matters along the way, mm-hmm, how did you generally find your news before you got to Franklin Matters? Or do you still have multiple news sources? I'm just curious, since we're doing this virtual guy on the street type of thing.
Yeah. Local news has been a mixed bag for me until pre-Franklin Matters. Like, Franklin Matters has actually been really huge for me keeping up locally. I've got it sorted like into a special folder in my email. So whenever it comes in, you know, I've got it not in my inbox, because I usually don't read it like immediately when getting it. But when I'm like, all right, let's catch up on the news, mm-hmm, I can go in and hop in and catch up on Franklin Matters, you know. But yeah, before that, I don't know, various of the like Boston news type websites that would have, you know, you could get more local area news. But I think I actually finally stumbled across Franklin Matters when a few months ago there was a fire at a house across the street from me here. And I was like desperately trying to find anybody talking about it. And I think Franklin Matters may have covered it, but in like, it, regardless in trying to like find hyper local news about Franklin, like I actually found the Franklin Fire Department talking about it on Twitter is where I ended up interacting.
Yep.
But like, I realized like, man, I really need a better source for like what's happening in my town. Cause I care about what's happening in my town.
Sure.
And in really searching around, stumbled across Franklin Matters. And it's like, oh, there's a newsletter. Great. I'm going to like get that. Cause yep. that I'm the kind of person that if it's coming to me regularly, again, I might not read it every single day, but I've got it there. And when I'm ready to catch up, I just pull it up and I've got all this great stuff to devour, you know, and it's helped me like learn so much more about what's going on. And I'm genuinely excited for COVID times to be done. I'm fully vaccinated as of today. I've had my 2 weeks since my second shot. So you know, I'm very happy that pretty soon we're going to start having normal stuff, not gaming related or video gaming related. There's a Nerf shop here in town that does Nerf modifications that I'm friends with the owner of. And we're starting to talk about planning a Nerf battle, in town, like at the end of May. So this first one, at least, is going to be the very small, like invite only kind of setup, but we're sort of testing the waters and trying to find like, you know, where might we host events at, and like long-term, we want to have a bigger thing that both obviously anybody in Franklin or nearby could get involved with, but also, you know, open it up to people in New England and beyond as well. Cause
sure.
I think there's a lot of people that have missed doing a lot of this kind of stuff. And I personally was never part of that community prior to COVID, but I've sort of gotten wrapped up in doing this Nerf stuff. And like, I really want to get involved in these events when they can be done again. And so we're actually going to do some here in Franklin too. So I'm excited about that.
Good. Is that the game shop down on Main Street?
No, so we have a Facebook group. I only recently got invited into it. So let me pull up the name of the group because I can't recall off the top of my head.
That's okay. You can send me the link too. I can include it in the show notes if it's
New England Nerf Community or NENC. So
okay.
If anybody's interested, join that Facebook group and we'll have more information there. But like I said, our upcoming event is going to be a really small, just a handful of us playing together. But you know, sometime in the summer, you know, late summer, early fall, maybe we're going to plan to do a pretty big event, I think. So
indeed. Yeah. And keep Franklin Matters in mind. We'll spread the word here.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Cause we've got the community calendar, I think, as you're aware, and
yep.
There's cultural things that are happening as things gradually open up. The Black Box has been doing some outdoor performances.
I love Black Box. I still haven't been to a show there, but like that was another one I discovered post COVID lockdowns and was like, okay, this is a place that I need to be, you know, start spending some money at and spend a lot of time with. So I'm excited to do that as well.
But. Yep. And then June 11, 12, 13, we just shared, and I just did an interview before this that'll be coming out for those listening in the future, near future. There's an art walk coming downtown Franklin.
Nice.
Starting that Friday, June 11th, there'll be a couple of things happening on the Common on Saturday on the Common as well. And then Sunday, I think it closes out with a couple of performances. I think the Historical Museum, Library, also events hosting. But then the art will be placed in the storefronts of some of the businesses downtown.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'll be able to do an art walk.
Yeah, excellent.
And then as part of the kind of family gathering type piece, they've got a scavenger hunt for the kids to look for artistic renderings of particular animals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an animal theme for their reading series for the summer reading.
Wow.
So the Franklin Art Association crafted some art around animals, and those will be hidden and the kids will have to go find them.
Wow, that's excellent. Yeah, one of my friends has a 9-year-old daughter and I'm always looking for stuff to do with her, so that might be like slightly skewing young there, but we also love art, and so I'm certain I'll be at that. Like, that sounds like a great time for sure.
Yes. Yeah. And I know the reading packages are kind of like the lower elementary grades, and then they do a higher package, so certainly the 9-year-old probably would be that either the high end of the low bet group or the low end and a mid group.
Pretty far up. Yeah. So she'll definitely want to be on the high end, I'm sure. But
yeah,
that sounds great though, for sure.
Yeah. So more happening and more coming as it goes. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm excited. And it's, you know, it feels like we're light at the end of the tunnel kind of situation, right? Where, you know, 2 or 3 months ago, I don't know that I would have said the same thing. And it's, you know, I'm really, really happy with, I feel like Massachusetts finally really stepped up. The new vaccine system is excellent. You know, I was phase two and I couldn't get a shot for a long time. And then the new system launched and I had my first appointment within like 3 days. So
excellent.
You know, I think anybody that hasn't signed up yet, it's extremely, extremely easy. They really, really make it incredibly easy. Us here in Franklin, we go to Gillette, you know, and I had actually never been inside Gillette Stadium before getting my vaccination. And my second vaccination I got on Patriots Day. So I was like, they didn't actually do anything, but I was in Patriots Stadium on Patriots Day, you know, getting my vaccine. So that was
not a bad place to be on that day, that's for sure.
But no, that was fun. You know, I actually have a birthday a week from tomorrow. So, you know, it's my goal was to be vaccinated before my birthday. And I was going to accept having one shot, you know, and having both of them now, it feels really nice. And again, I'm not in any rush. I'm still wearing masks when I go out. You know, we all need to be watching the case numbers and be careful, you know, but I haven't had a lot of concern with that around Franklin, and I've heard people with much worse experiences in other parts of Massachusetts. So I'm happy. The community seems like they're taking it really seriously. And, you know, I've been able to go to the store and all and not feel like I'm in trouble. Honestly, the first time before the mask mandate came down, when there was a mask recommendation and I went to the Shaw's in town, and I hadn't got my first mask yet, and I was one of maybe two or three people in the store without a mask on, and we were getting so many dirty looks from everybody else. And I was like, well, that's the last time I go out without a mask on.
Yeah.
It was maybe a day or two after the, you should consider wearing a mask when you go out. And I was like, all right, well, never making that mistake again.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I wear my mask all the time when I'm walking, since governor just released it. So outside, I don't need to.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the new plan is great. I really like seeing the, you know, the phases and all that. And, you know, I know for myself, I'm looking at the case numbers, you know, so we flatten that curve, keep it flat. I'm going to feel a lot more comfortable, but, you know, in the meantime, I don't love wearing a mask, but it's not hurting me. And I'd rather wear a mask than run into any health problems, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause the health of all of us matters for the business to continue. And that's going to be the key piece. Yeah.
For sure.
As I'm sure you're aware, whether it's gaming outside or not.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Absolutely. Well, this has been fun talking this virtual guy on the street kind of thing. So thank you for stopping and taking some time, Brian. And
yeah, thanks so much, Steven.
Good luck with your future endeavors in the gaming world, wherever they go. Absolutely. And if you're still around and we want to connect again, we'll just happen to meet on the street somewhere, right?
Yeah, sounds great. Yeah, maybe we can actually really meet in the street next time. So
yeah, well, we'll arrange, you know, whether it's a scavenger hunt or whatever, we'll meet somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even the art walk, right?
Yeah. So I think I will still be in town then, regardless of what happens with my job. From what I'm hearing, kind of July or August is probably the earliest anybody's relocating. So, you know, if I end up moving somewhere else, it's going to be end of the summer anyway. So,
okay.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008. And used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.